Are you ready for this? It's the Jubilee Podcast. Your headlines: Anderson rested, KP retires. We look at the West Indies, 1,000 runs in May. We're back with Carberry Corner. We look at the 50-over format. It's a wonderful format. And finally, is IPL turning into Neighbours? Find out. So, welcome to this innings of the Podblast. I've had a look at the conditions and I think we're going to have a chat.
Excellent, yes. Fantastic, Ross.
Thanks very much. So, first of all, the big news. KP has retired from limited overs cricket.
A lot of mixed emotions here in the Podblast about KP's departure in both 50 over and 2020 formats. Mm. A feeling generally around the cricket community of shock when it appeared on Twitter.
Or...
shock and awe.
A little bit of awe. Mostly shock.
A bit like his batting.
Yeah. Good. Like that.
But generally speaking, I think the conclusion on the behalf of the pundits has been that this is an unnecessary situation.
Well, unnecessary from both sides. Now, I have been making some big claims on Twitter. I said, one, KP would be back. I don't know whether I can back that up, but I can see...
He's not back yet, Ross.
Not back yet, but I can foresee a situation where that might be reconsidered. And we shall see. But also, I said, this is an ego issue. Ego issue. I said, this is an ego issue, as Richie Beno might have said.
Can I take a slight detour here? It's the Jubilee weekend, everyone.
Yay!
Rule Britannia. And a real missed opportunity, I think, yesterday in the BBC's coverage of the Jubilee pageant on the Thames to have Richie Beno in as one of the commentators.
That would have been great.
Something
been great.
Like, and I apologise for the impression, but something like, yeah, morning, everyone. And that's the Queen there on a boat.
You sound a little bit like Sean Connery. He's got a kind of, that's the Queen there on a boat.
Well, I've got a Sean Connery joke for you, Ross.
Very good. Proceed.
Sean Connery was going to Wimbledon and someone said to him, well, what time are you going to arrive, Sean? He said, 10-ish.
That's good. That's very good. The Queen looked very dry, didn't she, while all those singers were very wet. That was a little unfair, wasn't it?
You don't mean downstairs.
Jesus Christ, man. Oh, you heard it here first. Blammo. Now, it's an ego issue. That's what I said.
An ego issue.
I think that, you know, on behalf of the backroom staff and KP, they could have handled this so much better.
Yeah.
What I can't understand, and what I think the fundamentals of what really gets my goat, what grinds my gears, couldn't KP have played this summer, these internationals coming up? I think he's got 13. Could he not have stuck that out and then retired?
The irony of the situation, and I use irony in the Alanis Morissette definition of irony, not ironic at all in any way. It's that the Australians, because of a contract dispute with their top players, are thinking of boycotting the five one-day series games that they've got in the middle of the summer.
Yep.
And so, it may have been a situation where KP needn't have put his foot down.
Mm.
I hadn't realised, I must confess, and this is ignorance on my part, that the Australians were even coming for a one-day series.
That's true. No, I realised that.
Second question, why are they coming for a one-day series this summer?
Well, look, people love cricket. They have said it.
I love cricket.
People love cricket against Australia in particular. Now, I think it serves, and I wonder whether this is an impact as a direct result of the West Indies coming over. People don't care about the West Indies coming over anymore. I've said it.
I disagree, Ross. I think people do care about the West Indies. And it's that hangover from the great West Indian teams of the past.
Mm.
But what bemuses me is that with back-to-back Ashes series coming up pretty soon, they felt the need to shoehorn this Australian one-day series into the middle of it. George De Bell has been on the subject, and we always read what George has to say.
Love George.
And George says that there are faults on both sides. He's absolutely right. If you listen to the Switch Hit podcast this month, they were bemoaning the state of the West Indian administrators and what they're doing with their players. I think that there's been a massive failure on the part of the ECB here. It's a nonsense to my mind to try and pretend that the 50-over and the 20-over games have to be linked in a way, particularly at home where people can just drive to a game. They're not even touring. They don't even have similar responsibilities abroad in terms of admin and travel. And he could have ducked in and out. And the fact of the matter is KPs are great. And he could have single-handedly won us the 2020 World Cup. And now he's taking a walk because this is the straw that has broken the camel's back, the complete lack of flexibility.
Well, I think there's faults on both sides, and that's what I would say. I mean, to think that your 50-over team has to be very closely linked to your 20-over team, it is odd. We're not in the days when we think our best 11 is our best 11.
Well, they've got different captains.
Well, absolutely. I think we went through a barrier around the time of, I think, Adam Holyoake became captain. What you realise is one-day specialists do exist.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you realise that 2020 is not the same as 50-over cricket, it's not the same as Test match cricket, and you need different sorts of players for different occasions. As such, I think KP should have been allowed to retire. Having said that, he's retiring pretty early, isn't he?
Well, this is the next step. I've run through... there are two scenarios available with KP. Either he knew about the policy that 50 overs and 20 overs was together and decided that he was committed to both formats of the game by opening the batting for England over the winter with great success. And in fact, he gave press conferences saying he was committed till 2015 in one day cricket. So it looks like this option one is the reality. Or option two, this is a relatively late change by the ECB. I think it's option one. Next question then of his option one is, when did he change his mind? He must have changed his mind at some point after the end of the one-day series against Pakistan this winter and the second test. And was it at the IPL? Was it before the first test? Because his timing is bizarre and poor, and I think emotional.
I think so. I think, can it have to do with other issues he's got with ECB, the Nick Knight issue? The rather bizarre baiting of former England opener at one day and test level, Nick Knight. I think it seems to be very, something that that's, I just have the feeling they might ask him to reconsider. I don't, you know, he's got this new position at the top of the order. Absolutely with a view to him fulfilling that in both forms of cricket. That was the idea. You don't give someone a new role and try and make that work. For them to see them happy to leave straight out the back door when he'd been performing pretty well in this new role.
I feel for KP because we've said before that he's a hard worker and he's supernaturally talented. And he's been in a dressing room now with people like Steve Harmison and Flintoff, who have had problems either self-inflicted or inflicted upon them. And then, of course, Marcus Trescothick, who's been suffering a great deal during his time playing for England. And accommodations have been made where they needed to be made. And my feeling with KP is that accommodations haven't been made. He got hit on the Nick Knight issue. De Bell pointed out that Stuart Broad hasn't exactly been a saint on Twitter, and yet nothing said.
Yep.
The loss of the captaincy and the manner in which that was done still rankles. Let's be frank, Freddie Flintoff is a yeoman hero to every Englishman. But he did a lot of things which for an England captain were utterly awful. The way he behaved on that tour down under in Australia, the way he turned to the booze, ends up in the pedalo incident. People don't hold those things against him. KP, the outsider, has to struggle all the way through. And every now and then he'll act like a petulant child. Yep. But he's not being treated fairly. And what matters more to children than anything else is fairness or perceived fairness.
That's true. I agree with Freddie Flintoff. If there was a pygmy around, he would have tossed it. He you know, controversy seemed to find him. Also a player, as you've suggested, had troubles with sort of depression, as he's come out with fairly recently. I think there is to compare KP perhaps to a child is not far off. I mean, I think he's an extremely talented guy. He does have a sort of childlike enthusiasm for the game, and I think he needs to be managed. Players need to be managed, and I think he should have been managed through this. Somehow.
Yeah, and we're not saying he's a child in general. I mean, he's obviously going to be a good father to
adult.
His kids. He cares.
Yeah.
He's an adult.
He can read reasonably well, I assume.
His reading's excellent.
Is it?
I think it's key stage two.
Is he key stage two? That
key
is excellent.
Two. But he needs an arm round him, like so many cricketers in the past have needed an arm round them. Be that Phil Tufnell, Devon Malcolm, going back further even both of them under Brearley. It's not an uncommon situation. Who's putting their arm round Kevin Peterson?
I'll do it. I want to be the man.
We did Joss Butler's butler
just
last week.
Just like Joss Butler, I want to be Kevin Peterson's Hug man.
Yes, all right.
All these players need an arm around them. I want to be that arm. Look, there, I've said it. Look, as George DeBell does. I love KP. I wish him all the best in the world. But I think he perhaps not made the right decision here. But the ECB haven't covered themselves in glory either.
Shall we move on swiftly then to James Anderson? The decision to rest James Anderson for the third test against the West Indies, which Absolutely. Is coming up this Thursday,
yep.
is balmy army, Ross. Balmy. Absolutely absurd. I don't know whether you want to try and defend it, but can I make my case first?
Sure.
The gap between the third test against the West Indies and the first test against South Africa is over a month. The third test finishes on the 11th of June. The first test against South Africa starts on the 19th of July. This is a man who was not in the one-day team in the final one-day game against Pakistan in the winter.
Absolutely.
A man, even though he wants to play 2020, probably won't be in the 2020 team either.
Yeah.
What on earth is he going to do? He's just going to go play for Lancashire.
Yeah.
Why don't they play him in the third test?
Catch up on some reading.
If it's a minor quad problem, everybody can understand. But what Jeff Miller, the chairman of Selectors, said is that it was to manage his workload. And James Anderson is unhappy about that.
Mm.
Can I give you a scenario? What happens in the next game if Finn comes in and takes 10 wickets over the course of the innings? What yeah. do you do? Because I know they're going to have to pick Anderson again, but what message does that send to Finn? When you do this kind of squad rotation in this manner, you're brewing problems.
Surely Stephen Finn would rather come in and take 10 wickets, though, with respect, than
want to
not
be
play
dropped
at all.
Again.
Well, I think his playing is better than not playing, surely.
Yeah, we're talking about Stephen Finn as well. Is it going to be Finn or Onions?
Well, Finn or Onions, that's the big, I'd go with big question. Maybe when they say they're trying to manage his workload, has he got other stuff on? That's one of one. Is he studying for it? Is he doing a part-time degree with the Open University? I don't know. We just don't know. We don't have enough information, ECB. What I think is this, and I will defend it to a certain degree, is that I could see resting Broad. Broad's a guy that's broken down before.
I agree.
I think he's got a big workload. He's captain of the 2020 team. He's got 50 over cricket ahead of him. He'll play in all those formats. And I think the fact is that the workload on a young bowler like himself is large, and I could completely see why they would drop him. Anderson, that seems very odd. But as in all situations, you do trust that they are aware of all the little problems and niggles that players may have, and maybe they're trying to make Anderson manage him to get through quite far into his career. You know, he's a player that could hopefully go into his 30s as a bowler. And, I hope that's the case. But if it is simply dropping him for the sake of it. Someone brought up devaluing test caps, didn't they?
Yeah, well, the Atherton, this article for the Times, talks about devaluing test caps. And I think there's something to that as well. Broad is still in the line. He could still be dropped because let's bear in mind that both Onions and Finn are in the 13-man squad. So you could have Broad attend. One would think that having called Broad up and not called Anderson up, it's not their intention to drop Broad as well.
Yep.
But that's the Anderson situation. We'll see how it plays out. There's not really going to be any great loss on the bowling front. Anderson is a better bowler than Finn or Onions, but you'd feel on the third test against the West Indies that Onions or Finn are going to do the job. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what Anderson gets up to in the meantime. Maybe we'll have photos of him being dragged out of Annabelle's at 3 a.m. with a woman called Binky on his arm.
Who knows? I wouldn't put it past him, although I hear he's a lovely man. Now, we did just quickly mention, and I'll finish on this because I don't want to leave a bad smell hanging around my feelings toward the West Indies. I love the West Indies. I think they're a terrific cricket nation. I want more from them, and I wonder.
It means a lot to them, Ross.
That's I can almost feel the tears of Marlon Samuels on the back of my neck for some reason. But I think there is, there are big issues with West Indies cricket. It's been much talked about, and I do think all commentators and pundits and analysts saying things like, well...
Do we include ourselves in that?
I think I'm not going to. I'm going to critique the cricket critic on this one. Saying there's still something about a West Indies test. Leads me to think there isn't. I mean, why keep telling us it? We'd know it if there was it. And the fact that you keep telling us there's something about a West Indies test makes me think there is a lack of interest in this test, and that's why they brought brought Australia over as part of the summer package.
Well, tickets are not selling well for Edgbaston and the third test, and that's a shame.
Yep.
But that's an indication of how one-sided this series has been. Anybody who isn't buying a ticket because they think it's going to be a walkover, all I would say is watch some of the old footage on the BBC website of the Great West Indians, the Marshalls, the Holdings, the Crofts, the Lloyds, destroying England series after series. Watch those, go to Edgbaston, enjoy it being on the other foot.
There, we said it. I love West Indies cricket. Finally, I mean, people have talked a little bit about West Indies players that aren't there. Now, look, we got Dwayne Bravo, Gale, Dwayne Smith, Pollard, all ripping it up in the IPL, along with Naren, who's now joined the team. And I'd like to see him in for that final game. So he's a terrific talent. He was player of the tournament, the IPL.
Yeah.
Also, Ramnaresh Sarwan, currently plying his trade rather successfully at Leicestershire. But these players, for one reason or another, haven't found their way in. It's difficult to say whether bringing in a team of stars is what they were referred to by Skipson. He wanted a star team rather than a team of stars. I think that makes a lot of sense. And yet, it's difficult to see a team not playing their best side for one reason or another. And only time will tell whether that's true. One thing that is true, they're a bloody good one-day side. And I think with some of those characters coming in, I think they're going to be a really strong test for England in one-day cricket. And I'm a lover of one-day cricket. We'll come back to that later on.
I'm not a lover of one-day cricket, and we will come back to that later on. But I think the most conclusive argument against not bringing those guys in for the tests is the fact is they were selected in the test series last time round, where they came over in the beginning of May, about 3-4 years ago, and they were rubbish and they got thrashed. So any suggestion that having Gale and Sarwan and these people back in the team is somehow going to save the West Indies is absolute nonsense.
Well, I just think that there are some really talented people out there. You know, whether, again, it's do you manage players or do you discard them? And I think if you've got players that talented, you try and bring them through, work out what the problems are. Anyway, I am not Otis Gibson. Those rumours are not true. Am I him in disguise? Broadcasting from a secret location in London, I'm not. But I just think he's... They need to find their way through this, because I think at the moment, I mean, look, Martin Samuels has batted very well, but you bring five out of form batsmen over, law of averages says one of them's going to score some runs. Is that harsh?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Let's talk about a man who I would say has had the most extraordinary week this week.
Okay.
And as people will be saying, well, you know, who's it going to be? Is it IPL related? Are we going to talk about Compton? We're possibly going to talk about Compton.
Yeah.
But the man this week who will be absolutely enjoying himself more than anyone else is Craig Kiesewetter. Down in Somerset, has a bowl for the first time in county cricket. A wicketkeeper, Kiesewetter.
Yep. Took the gloves
Somerset,
off.
Took the gloves off. Three overs, no maidens, three runs, two wickets bowling his off spin.
Ooh.
Absolutely extraordinary. So congratulations to Craig Kiesewetter for tearing it up. Reminds me of something that doesn't happen anymore, which is a real shame, is that when Test cricket in particular, but also certain county games, used to wind down towards a draw in the old days, and I'm talking 30, 40 years ago, they used to bring on bowlers who would entertain the crowd by doing impressions of other bowlers.
Did they?
So Graham Gooch would get to bowl, and he would do impressions of bowlers like Old or whoever else was around, Lily, and he would come on and do these bowling impressions.
Like Rory Bremner.
There has to be a space for this in modern cricket. What a shame.
Well, Novak Djokovic does a lot of impressions of other players while he plays in sort of celebrity matches.
Does he really?
Yeah, he uses their style. I didn't know Gooch was
Novak Djokovic
was
played, sort of played cricket.
No, this isn't the tennis world. This is in our tennis podcast we do on Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Another time.
That was a preview.
Next issue. 1,000 runs in May.
Someone scored 1,000 runs in May.
What a wonderful achievement it would have been for Nick Compton of Somerset to have scored 1,000 first-class runs by the end of May in the county championship.
Indeed.
And he narrowly avoided it this week. Our commiserations go to him. He needed 59 runs for his 1,000 runs by May. He ended up being stranded on 9 not out as the month turned to June. And in fact, he went on to score 108. So he continues to do excellently in that game in particular, which was Worcestershire against Somerset, which is a rain-induced draw.
Well, that brings in another minor character who's been pretty consistent throughout the podcast. It's the weather in Worcestershire. as sort of the evil character. The Elton John defeated the Weather in Worcestershire.
I don't know if the game was at Worcestershire or Somerset.
It was at Worcestershire, yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, there we go. The weather in Worcestershire howls.
Oh, I saw an excellent interview with Compton afterwards. He's very disappointed. But he was very well composed and he's an interesting character, Compton. I like him a lot.
Does he sound South African?
I tell you what, he doesn't as much as I thought he would.
Well, does he sound any more South African than all of the England players? Because I don't know whether you've noticed, but people like Alistair Cook and Ian Bell, even though they're English through and through,
have started to sound.
Try to pretend to sound South African.
Do they?
Do you ever listen to an interview with them?
That's a wild
That's
claim.
Definitely a feature we're going to do on another podcast. Because every time I hear things come out of their mouth, I think, why are you trying to put on a South African accent?
Jeez, is that what they
just
do?
Just to fit in.
Oh, there is just a cricketing sort of dialect, I think, which
but
is
the cricketing dialect
pretty
is
much
pretending to be South Australian or South African.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between, isn't it?
What room anymore for the plummy accent of yesteryear, of Douglas Jardine?
Well, why don't they all talk like blowers?
Missed opportunity.
Yes, no.
1,000 runs in May has only ever been achieved 8 times in the county championship. And it's increasingly rare since the introduction of one day cricket.
Absolutely.
Where you would have much less county championship games before the end of May. Or far fewer, I should say. Much less is grammatically incorrect in blowers or jogging.
That's something we don't want to do. We'll get called up on it. KP would have you on that one.
Let's go back to 1895.
I'm coming with you.
W.G. Grace achieved 1,000 runs by the end of May. Moving on to 1900, Tom Hayward. Described by Wisden as one of the greatest batsmen of all time. And you can understand why. For 20 years in succession, he scored over 1,000 runs in the county championship.
Terrific. Wow.
1928. Oh, he had a fantastic moustache, Ross.
Oh, you would have enjoyed that. I love it. I like a cricket player with a moustache as much as I like a rugby player with a beard.
Charlie Hallows, 1928, 2 tests, averaged 42 in his 2 tests, had the unfortunate situation where he was behind Hobson Sutcliffe to open the batting for England, and therefore never really got the chance that he needed. Bradman, twice in 1930 and 1938, and joined in 1938 by Bill Edrick, who was then called up for England and eventually was become an England great. Why are we taking this tour through the latter years of
what's your
of
problem?
Cricketing history? What's my problem? Why are you saying this? I'll tell you why. I'm trying to. I don't really know
that
was
weird. I like that though. Go on.
I'm a little aroused. Is that wrong?
I don't know. We'll find out. Go on.
Anyway, why are we taking this trip down memory lane? We're trying to work out whether 1,000 runs in May is an indication of a successful subsequent international career. Gets interesting. 1973, Glenn Turner, New Zealand batsman, now a New Zealand national selector, described as a great by Wisden. 41 test matches, test average of 44, 41 ODIs and an average in ODIs of 47.
Ooh.
He is a New Zealand legend.
That sounds
he
good.
Scored for Worcestershire.
Ooh.
1,000 runs in May 1973.
Wow.
Next up, 1988, again prior to his original selection by England, Graham Hick, another Worcestershire great. You can see the connection here with that great county, a colossus.
He wasn't
at county level. None on the tour. He averaged over 50. This is the interesting bit about Graham Hick, though. Of the 1,000 runs he'd scored by the end of May, he scored 405 not out versus Somerset. So 405 of the 1,000 were in one innings.
Brilliant.
In the next 4 innings he batted, he only scored a combined total of 32, which left him, at the end of May, needing 152 against the West Indian touring team to make 1,000 runs in May. And he did it, scoring 170 in a day.
Oh, they called him a flat-track bully. Do you know what? I was hearing more about Hick recently, and he was one of those guys who was constantly dropped and brought back in by one Ted Dexter, wasn't he?
I know. There was a period of time where Graham Hick averaged 45 at test level, and he did that over a period of about 2.5 years, and then Dexter just dropped him.
Unbelievable. He was a supernaturally talented batsman, like you said, of KP, powered by ghosts.
Considered by some also to be one of the best slip fielders ever.
He's an excellent slip fielder.
Not a bad off-spinner either. Question. Does that mean that Compton could be almost exceptional himself. And my answer to that is, I was surprised taking this trip down memory lane. Mm. I think batsmen that get anywhere near that mark tend to be, rather than one-hit wonders, the real deal.
Because I thought that segment was going the other way.
No.
Did you in your research?
No. No, I consider Hick to be a man who was hard done by by selectors and would have done better. I don't think he was anything other than a success at county level. And I think Compton, there has to be room found for him in the England squad against India. Question.
I think so.
Number two. Ooh. Can he play spin?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen Compton bat. I'd love to. We must take a trip. One other thing I'll throw in there. The other last person to get 1,000 runs by the 2nd of June, also just missing out. Do you know who that was? Just, I think, three seasons ago.
Who was that?
Robert Key.
Yeah, Robert Key is another man who may not have had the cleanest run from selectors.
But he's got a good average for England, I think, still, isn't he? He's called a double 100.
Double 100. All right, let's end this segment with an anecdote. And I was looking for something a little more modern to do with Compton, perhaps. But looking through these one of these sledging websites, I found the following. Take yourself back to Merv Hughes bowling at Hansi Cronje on a flat pitch. Mm. He's been hit for four. He's been hit for six. There's nothing he can do to stop Hansi Cronje scoring at will against him. So what does he do? Good old Merv Hughes goes halfway down the wicket and emits a loud fart. And he says to Hansi Cronje, hit that for six.
That is brilliant.
I think it's my new favourite cricket anecdote. For the sophisticated listener.
Jesus Christ, try and hit a fart for six. I'm going to try and put that into conversation. Well, that piece dovetailed beautifully, didn't it? It all came together like a melange of cricket chat.
That was wonderful, but as usual, we promised more than we can deliver.
Content-wise, we've delivered so much, but there are bits you'll have noticed. Carberry Corner, it's a wonderful format, and this IPL turning into Neighbours will have to be in the next innings.
So, thank you very much for listening. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at @CricketPodBlast. You can send us an email at thecricketpodblast@gmail.com. And I've been Alex.
I've been Ross.
And we've been The Cricket Podblast.
Thanks very much. Come join us next week. There'll be more cricket chat and analysis. It's gonna be pretty fun. Come along, it's gonna be kinda wild.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gonna be kinda wild. We might talk cricket poetry.